The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. And Get Real to Heal is proud to be underwritten by AFC Urgent Care, which is located across from the Brentwood City Hall. We all know flu season is right around the corner. No matter how many times you have your kids wash their hands or how much elderberry syrup you're drinking, you know that there's still a possibility that they're going to come in and spread the flu to your entire household. As a family care provider, AFC Urgent Care can diagnose and treat all the members of your family. AFC Urgent Care is open 7 days a week, long after traditional physician office hours end. More information can be found on AFC Urgent Care's website, www.afcurgentcare.com/Brentwood, or by calling 314-731-6265. I am so pleased to be here today with Dr. Kim Twyman of Mercy Kids Autism Center. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks Amanda for inviting me. I'm excited to be here too.
So excited to have you. So you have had, you know, one of the places I love to start with guests is if they have their own healing journey they've been on, just sharing a little bit about that for the audience to inspire people. I know I get a lot of feedback on, you know, the things that I've shared about my own health journey, which has been quite storied. So tell us a little bit about where your journey down the integrative path began in terms of your health.
Oh, sure. I actually started it personally. I had some really bad allergies and had to go on several medications that I wasn't very happy about taking chronically. So I started investigating other options, holistic options, integrative options, and I stumbled upon a doctor in the area who really taught me a lot about nutrition and supplements and things that I could do to help that. And one by one, I was able to take myself off of all of the allergy medicines, and I don't really need anything at this point. So I was very happy about that. And so learning about that helped me to help others with that. So I took some courses through the Institute for Functional Medicine, and then did a two-year fellowship through the University of Arizona with Dr. Weil, Andy Weil, and just learned all kinds of great tools that I now can incorporate in my daily practice. So I'm excited to share that with all the families that I see.
That's so cool. And I was fortunate enough through the Institute for Integrative Nutrition to take some classes taught by Andrew Weil, and he's just absolutely amazing.
He is amazing.
Yes. Yeah, I have a little bit of envy right now for the fact that you got to study with him even further. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you've learned in your personal journey, the tools that have helped you the most?
Oh, for me personally?
Yeah.
I would say the importance of getting, you know, just go back to the basics, getting enough sleep at night, eating well, going outside every day, getting regular exercise. You know, we always like to complicate things and try to put patients on complicated regimens. But really, if you start with the basics, I think you'll go a long way with that. And then taking care of your well-being, too. You know, after I did my integrative medicine fellowship, I wanted to focus more on that. So I became a well-being coach through the Anthropedia organization. And I feel like that's been just one more tool that has been really helpful day to day.
I love to hear that a doctor has also become a coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy it. It's something that I do on weekends, and I really enjoy sharing it with people. And then, you know, every time I get to meet with a client, it reinforces all of what I've learned personally, too. So it's great.
Now, how do you think, do you feel like you know, it's tough right now because there's such a difference between conventional and integrative perspectives in medicine, right? How can we better merge the two?
I think integrative medicine does a really nice job of integrating both. You know, the definition of integrative medicine kind of combines the best of both worlds. You get the conventional treatments that are shown to be helpful, but then you use the evidence-based integrative treatments, the complementary and alternative treatments that are been shown to be helpful too. So really you get both.
How are you able to integrate some of what you've learned from the coaching side of things into your practice as a physician?
I use it every day. I didn't think I would use it as much, but there's a lot of, through the training, there's a lot of focus on, you know, just finding satisfaction in life, taking care of yourself, finding hope. And so sharing that with families in the course of just my recommendations is helpful. Also, there's a lot of focus on mental health aspects too, you know, just how your brain works, you know, emotionally versus rationally, and how sometimes our emotions can take over and cause our thinking brain to not work as efficiently as or as well as it had been before. So I use those techniques with the kids to help them understand what's going on, and then also use, you know, the coping and calming techniques that are helpful.
So what are some of the integrative approaches that you really dial in on that have helped your patients?
I've really gotten into mind-body interventions. I really am a big believer in things like breathing exercises, progressive muscle relaxation, yoga, meditation, guided visualization, guided imagery, you know, things like that that are free. You don't have to spend a lot of money on them, but you get such a big benefit when you do them every day. So I have been focusing more and more on that in my practice. But also nutrition is important. And then just getting outside, seeing the sun, avoiding those things that kind of bring us down, like screen time and, you know, spending too much time online, getting away from that has been kind of my area of focus at this point.
And that's a good segue into one of the topics that we wanted to touch on today, which is screen time for kids. It sounds like You get a lot of questions about that in the office, and there are a lot of people really concerned about the rise in screen time.
Oh, yeah. I have been reading a couple of studies recently. One was in Singapore showing that kids, even young kids, preschoolers and toddlers, are really using screens more than what the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends.
And what is the recommendation on that?
Well, for kids under 3, we recommend no screen time at all because it really doesn't add any benefit. Now, you know, if kids want to look at pictures with mom or do video chat with grandma because she's not in town, I'm totally fine with that. And that's part of the recommendation that's okay. But ideally, no screen time at all. And then preschoolers, we really recommend 1 hour a day or less. Ideally with a parent. So make it an interactive experience because screens can be very isolating for a lot of kids. And then when you're over 5, 2 hours a day or less.
So yeah, I would have to say as a parent myself, I was not even close to those recommendations.
Oh, sure. For many, it's something many, many parents struggle with. And, you know, the kids love it so much and their behavior is so much better when they're looking at a video. And so it's easy to reach for that when you need to. And then, you know, just having that knowledge, though, a lot of families are starting to cut back as the guidelines have come out. So
yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Well, and I have to say, even just thinking back to my own childhood back in the 80s, I spent a lot of time watching PBS. And I remember, you know, when mom and dad would sleep in on the weekends, you know, getting up early because I still woke up at, you know, bright and early and bushy-tailed at 6 a.m. Yeah. And would go out and wait for, do you remember when they had like the bars? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Before TV, it was like, oh, there is no TV until like 6 a.m. You just get to watch this weird thing on the screen. I remember getting up that early and just waiting for cartoons to come on, you know, and then watching that for hours. And so I guess the thing is, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's more screen time now. It's more accessible because of all the different technology we have. Mm-hmm. But so many of us are like, well, how much can it really hurt? You know, so what are some of the ways that we've seen that even in our generation?
Yeah, you know, I remember that too, you know, watching PBS in the morning and seeing the screen, and then the yoga show would come on, and then the cartoons. I got up early too. But yeah, we're seeing that the more kids consume screen time, especially at an early age, that the more aggression we're seeing in young children. We're seeing an increased incidence of ADHD. We're also seeing language delay in younger children. So they're, you know, they're getting a lot receptively from this show, right? You know, they're getting a lot of words said to them, but they're not able to practice speaking back to the TV or the video. So those are, you know, just among the many things that we see. And then in children with autism, one thing that I've seen a lot of is that it can be very isolating. So they'll take the iPad and run into the other room. And so that doesn't help them for their with their social skills when they're continually isolating themselves instead of interacting with their family.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think there's such an isolating factor for people in general, adults too. It's something to touch on.
Yeah.
You know, so many of us think that we're connecting by being on social media and
we're not. Yeah, no. We're isolating ourselves. You know, loneliness, anxiety and depression are at all-time highs. And so I have to wonder if screens can be a part of that, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, and then I read a lot about, you know, just the fact that we get a nice dopamine hit.
Uh-huh.
They can be very addictive.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. You know, there's research to show that, you know, watching screens rewards those same areas in the brain. You know, they've done functional MRI studies that have shown that it lights up all the addiction centers and the areas that are correlated with addiction in your brain. So,
yeah, so between all of those factors and then just the comparison that we do of others on social media, because Lord knows we don't all put all our baggage out.
That's right. So, that's right. It's the best possible story about us. And then we see everyone else's best story and we think we're not living up to it.
Yeah. Screen time. And so how does that... So let's talk about sleep, too. You said that comes up in the office as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I've noticed differences in my son's behavior. Even a half hour less sleep makes a big difference for him. I get behavior reports from, or I shouldn't say that now, he's in middle school now, but in elementary school, it was very common for me to get a note. I always knew if he had stayed up just a little bit too late, I was going to get a note about his behavior the next day. It was like clockwork.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can't function without sleep. It's important for restoration, consolidating memory. So we see a lot of kids who struggle with sleep, and then you're right, their behavior is not as good the next day. Their ability to learn and remember what they've learned the day before looks worse the next day. And then over time, that can look a lot like inattention and result in some hyperactivity. And then for some kids, it can look a lot like ADHD. So sleep is an important foundation for learning and
I have
behavior.
To say, we experienced that with him. It was getting to the point where, you know, we were thinking that we might have to medicate him. This is before I went on my own health journey and figured out that, you know, there were other ways to address the issue. Uh-huh. But prior to that, I was just medicated out the wazoo as well.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't know another way. But yeah, after getting him to sleep a bit more and changing a few little things about his diet, we noticed the ADD, ADHD issues that we had experienced with him because it would swing from one to the other. They really weren't issues for him at all.
Great.
How often is it misdiagnosed?
Well, you know, I don't know that percentage, but I've seen it often enough. Like I'll get referrals for kiddos that come in and they have a lot of behaviors that look concerning. So if you look at the questionnaires and you talk to the parents, it's like, gosh, it sounds like there's a lot going on. But then you dig deeper and then you realize how poorly they're sleeping. And so sometimes I won't make the diagnosis right away. I'll defer that until the sleep issues are addressed, especially in young kids. There are a lot of kiddos, 3-4 years old who are struggling with just establishing good sleep patterns. And they may have things like obstructive sleep apnea because their tonsils are too big. They may have other problems that need to be addressed. And then once those are addressed, the behavior improves. Incredibly well. So I think it's always worth nailing that down before starting medication.
So you named a couple of the bigger complications that can be involved with sleep, but what are some of the simpler hacks that you use to help your patients?
I think, you know, just things like getting up at the same time every morning and going to bed at the same time every night, even on weekends, you know, don't let kids fall asleep, don't let them sleep in on weekends. Try to limit naps for the younger kiddos. I would limit naps to earlier in the day instead of later. You know, a lot of kiddos, like they get tired and they want to take naps, you know, around dinner time, and then that impacts them falling asleep. One other big thing is just to see the sunlight in the morning. So getting some AM sunlight, just sit out on your patio or out in your front yard for about 5 or 10 minutes, or on the way to school, roll down your windows, even if it's cold, just so you can get the effect of the sunlight. The sunlight, especially in the morning, resets our circadian rhythm for the day and resets several of the clock genes that we have in our body. And so, you know, getting that as a start is important. And then getting back to screens, reducing screen time in the evening is important too. You know, we recommend, you know, turning off most of the lights in your home. You know, avoiding screens in the hour or two before bedtime. Those types of things signal the brain. If you can shut off most of the lights, that signals your brain that, hey, it's nighttime and I need to start making melatonin. So your brain starts making melatonin, you feel sleepy and you're more likely to fall asleep.
I think those are fantastic recommendations. And of course, they mirror a lot of, we should mention that you're half of a power couple in medicine here in the integrative world in St. Louis. And so if you'd like to catch another great interview that talks a lot about circadian rhythm, your husband, Dr. Michael Twyman, has been on the show a few times. Mm-hmm. And people can go to soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal or facebook.com/getrealtoheal and check out the interviews with him as well.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I'm sure he gave you lots of tips during that show.
He did. And you both did a great job of encapsulating that. I love that you're both on the same page. And regardless of the spectrum, you know, he's a cardiologist and working with a very different type of patient than you are. Mm-hmm. But the recommendations are really good across the board for any human.
Yeah, that's right. They're universal. We all need them.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on, you know, I was very involved with our school district here in PTO and a couple of other areas. And one of the things that was changed while my son was in elementary school was they took away nap time for kindergartners. Mm. What are your thoughts mm-hmm. on that? These are full day students.
Yeah, that can be challenging for some kids. Now, most kids will outgrow naps by the time they're four.
Okay.
You know, before then, kids will take a variable amount, need a nap of a variable amount of time. But some kids still need that at kindergarten. So I think, you know, it would be nice if we could have a nap time, but if you don't need it, make it a quiet time where you're reading. So that way the kids that need it can get it. And the ones that don't can spend that time doing a quiet activity that's calming and relaxing and sets them up for the rest of the day.
What are your thoughts on meditation for kids?
I love it. Yeah, I'm so excited to hear more and more of the school districts are using meditation and yoga and things like that in the classroom because it really does make a difference. And so even with little kids, you can do some meditation. There's some meditation apps out there. You can just sit quietly for a minute. You can use some guided imagery, which is kind of similar to meditation, but has a kind of a direction. I'm a big fan, and I think you can't start early enough. So if you're already meditating, you know, yourself, and you want to start that with your child, just have them sit on your lap and start it. I recommend it.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic practice. I know it's been really life-changing for me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love seeing it in kids. And I taught my son to meditate a few years ago now, and he's not very regular with it. It's definitely not his MO, but the few times that he did do it with me, he really enjoyed it. And he would open his eyes, and I remember once he opened his eyes, and he just goes, wow, the color's always this bright. Like, he was so relaxed. He was in that great parasympathetic state, you know, that it's just like, everything felt good. And he's talked about that a few times since. Yeah. This has been good inspiration. I'm going to get back on him about meditating.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And how cool is that? That he became more mindful of his surroundings and more aware. And I think for kids who have attention or focus problems, that can really be helpful.
Yeah. He's definitely my son.
Yeah.
All of those things. Another thing I wanted to touch on, since we're still on the school bit, you know, I've also noticed a tendency towards shorter meal times. Can you talk a little bit about how rushing through the eating process can be perhaps detrimental?
Yeah, I haven't given much thought to that, but you're right that shorter meals, you know, meals are not only just to get your lunch, eat your lunch and nutrition and fuel you for the rest of the day, but it's also a social opportunity. And so by cutting down on that, I worry that kids are missing out on social. They're not giving their bodies the proper time to digest the food. You know, some of the kids that I see prefer it that way because they are in a rush to get out on the playground. I've heard from some of them. But, you know, I think restricting that time can be tough for those slow eaters and those who need a little bit extra time to digest. So
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I worry, too, about just from a gut health standpoint, you know, are we missing out on the mindfulness that it takes to really activate digestion properly?
Oh, true. And then there's the worry about overeating for some kids. If they're not mindful and if they're not thinking about what they're doing because they're in a rush, they may be more likely to overeat or choose things that aren't healthy. You know, you think about our middle schoolers and high schoolers who get choices in the lunch line. You know, they may not choose the things that they need.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So you work with Mercy Kids Autism Center, and I think autism just being on the right, what are the numbers and stats around autism these days? It feels like I know so many people who have children that have been diagnosed on the spectrum.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't know the most recent estimates. Last I read was 1 in 68, with 1 in 40 boys are being diagnosed. So it's becoming more prevalent.
What do you think is behind, what are the driving factors? Do we know yet?
It's an incredibly complex disorder. And I wish I had the answer because, gosh, we could help so many kids if we did. But I suspect that there's an underlying genetic factor, or maybe even an epigenetic factor spanning back several generations, that predisposes us to autism as well as other chronic diseases. And then there's things that are in our environment that are maybe triggering those genes to be expressed is kind of one of the theories. So things like pollution, the food that we eat, the kind of lifestyle that we live, you know, lack of sleep, not taking care of our health. I think all of those things factor in, but it's not one thing.
So when someone brings their child in and you know, are they coming in to see you referred from another physician, perhaps, or are they just coming directly to you because they are suspecting that there might be a spectral disorder going on? Or, you know, how do people first come in to see you? What's that?
Yeah, most of the families that we see are referred by their doctor. And I encourage families to have a conversation with their doctor if they're concerned their child might have autism. But we also see families that are self-referred if they have concerns.
And how do they, you know, if someone's at home and they're starting to, I guess, what are some of the ways that you diagnose that, or how would families know?
I think that starting with the pediatrician will be important, because there's some screening tools that they could administer in the office. If not, they can go online and complete it. For young children, I like using the MCHAT assessment. If you're under 3 years old, older than that, there's some other assessments that you can do. But really, if you talk to the pediatrician first, that's a good way to screen for it. Sometimes it's not easy to tease things like autism apart from language delay or learning difficulties or a behavior problem. And so that's where we can help. So we usually do a more comprehensive assessment. Of course, we want to get to know the kids well. We want to understand what's going on, what's driving their behavior, what's going on with their learning. And so typically our assessments are a couple hours long and involve some direct testing with the child as well as talking to the families. And then that gives us a sense of what's going on and allows us to develop a comprehensive treatment plan for them.
Okay. And when people talk about autism spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I have to admit, I just don't know a lot about it. And I think a lot of people are a bit confused. If they don't have someone in the family that's been through this, they may not understand what that means. What does the spectrum encompass?
Sure. You know, the autism spectrum is really broad. And so sometimes, you know, there are some children who have symptoms that impact them more, such as maybe they're not talking yet. Maybe their behaviors are really interfering with their functioning and they're really struggling to communicate and interact socially. And then we have kids who are on the milder end of the spectrum who are, you know, maybe a little bit older, they're talking, but they're working on conversational skills, they're working on social skills with their peers. You know, academically, they may be doing really well. And then we have everything in between, too. So it's not a specific while the criteria that we use are pretty specific, it's not a specific diagnosis.
And I've talked to some parents who, you know, had recently had children diagnosed, and that can feel heavy. It can feel heavy to receive those words, right? Just like any diagnosis.
Absolutely.
What do you say to those parents to comfort them or to help them to manage through that?
Oh, you know, I just tell them it's going to be okay. You know, it's hard when you're at the beginning of that road and you're hearing those words for the first time, you know, and there's for some families, some grief that goes along with that. And then for some families, there's relief. I finally have an answer. And so just talking about, you know, what are the next steps? Where are we going? You know, let's talk about the new things that the child's going to be doing the next time I see them and down the line, and the progress they're going to be making, and the fact that there's all kinds of therapies and things that can help them. So we just start with that. We just say, all right, let's map out a plan, and then let's see how things go. If we need to tailor that plan, you know, because there's something new comes up, we can do that. But we celebrate all the successes, you know, and there are many successes when families come in. We celebrate all of those.
Well, and I know several of, we actually coincidentally do share some clients, and I don't know that you know that, mm-hmm. but I've heard such wonderful things about the ways that you've impacted their life positively, and I just really appreciate the work that you do. So thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your knowledge and wisdom and your time so generously.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, and for all of the work that you do, I just appreciate you. Dr. Kim Twyman of Mercy Kids Autism Center, how can people get in touch with you or reach out to the center?
Oh, sure. You could just give us a call. We're at 314-872-3345. You'll talk to Alicia or Becky, who will start you through the process if you want to have an evaluation with us.
Well, thanks again.
Oh, thank you.
This has been Amanda LaPlante. You've been listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRH LP 92.9 FM. I am an integrative health coach, and I can help with a variety of issues. I would love to give you a free consultation today. Feel free to reach out to me through amandalaplante.com or at 314-583-6749. And go make it a great day.